So our first law of robotics is that every life form has to be able to feel and show emotions.
I'm Jason Lopez of PodTech News. Demo 2006, probably remembered as the year of the ice cream served up by the ice cream machine vendor Mubella. In this second of three parts, Michael Johnson and I ask the obvious question. Who are you and what do you do? With some compelling answers.
This is Michael Johnson of PodTech News, and we're here with Caleb Chung and Bob Christopher from Ugobee Incorporated. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell us what you're known for.
Well, previously I co-invented the Furby toy that came out in 98 and sold 40 million units.
And counting.
And counting, yeah, it came out again this year.
Okay, so the Furbies are still going.
They reissued them this year, and I think they've sold a couple million so far.
It's not a Ugobee product. That's a Hasbro product. But Caleb helped bring it to life.
Okay. That's right.
And tell me, what are you showing here at Demo?
Pleo. It's a baby Camarasaurus.
We're showing.
We're showing Pleo, a baby Camarasaurus. It's a long-necked dino. It's really showcasing our technology platform. Ugobee develops revolutionary technology that transforms inanimate objects into lifelike creatures that exhibit organic movement and dynamic behaviors. So we really bring life to robots.
Now, you showed a little bit of Pleo this morning. Now, what's different about Pleo? I mean, I know that there's been a lot of interactive toys. We've had a number of these little sort of, robot dog type things that have come out from various companies, and I think they're being mass produced in China right now.
Right.
What's different about Pleo?
Well, Pleo, I think it's kind of a Ugobee mindset. A lot of technologists or even toy companies focus the user experience around the technology itself. It's kind of whiz-bang, a lot of flashing lights. It's very exciting for a short period of time, and it certainly sells. What we're doing is we're actually trying to make the technology transparent and bring the character to the front. So at the end of the day, you care more about who Ugobee's characters are than how they work. So I think, in general, that's driven the company to be a very kind of left-brain, right-brain company, where we develop technology to a very high level, but it's always in service of the end user experience. And in this case, Pleo is designed to create a bonding response in humans. That's kind of a funny way of saying it's a pet.
Now, what was the impetus for this? Because I think we had Furbies, we had the interaction from that, very successful. What was the thinking going into creating Pleo? Because it's a very different kind of mindset into want a toy that does that many things.
We want to bring really great content to life. We feel there's a missing link between robots and people right now. And part of that, the big part of the missing link, is that the organic experience of lifelike robotics. There's not really any lifelike robotics in the market today at a mass market level. And so what we decided to do is create a wonderful user envelope experience. One that where people would be completely immersed and engaged in our products and find them to be fascinating. And as Caleb is suggesting, lifelike as a pet. So we've developed a technology platform. It's called the Lifeform Operating System. And what we're essentially able to do is we're able to make robots move organically like real living creatures with all of the subtleties of body movement and motion expression, smoothness of really showing, in this case, emotive gesture and feelings. So maybe Caleb, we'll talk about more about the emotive side.
Right. I think since this is a podcast, I'll have to paint a visual for you. When you look at what you think of as a robot, it moves kind of in a jerky way. In other words, there's no speed control. It starts and stops and in a very functional way. And I believe that's for several reasons. One is because its goal is function. It's trying to do a task. And when you look at ours, they move very smoothly, which is what nature's way of moving limbs is with an acceleration, deceleration, either that to save energy. But whenever you look at organic life forms, they move in this kind of very smooth way. So that's the first thing you notice when you look at Ugobee's products is they move like real things. And that was pretty tough to do, actually. The next thing you'll notice is They balance and walk around seemingly effortlessly. And this has been a big issue in quadruped robotics and biped robotics is the feedback systems that allow things to balance and kind of follow the laws of physics and actually get around. So what you see in the marketplace are things that move around, but they don't move around in a natural way. So our kind of engine that creates this lifelike motion is one of our main pieces of technology that allow us to bring out this product at this time.
So how does Pleo do this? I mean, is it a sensor net? I mean, it's got to be able to be aware of its environment, obviously, to
right,
move around that way.
There's actually three laws that we've used to kind of bound our creations. The first, actually and foremost, these three laws are a little different than Asimov's because he had revolution on his hands, so we're trying not to do that. But
we don't want any eye Pleos.
No, we have a little evolution, that revolution maybe. So our first law of robotics is that every life form has to be able to feel and show emotions. And that speaks to the organic movement and body language, really. So when he looks sad, he really looks sad. Everything droops. When he's happy, he's perky. His movements are perky. And he behaves in a way that is consistent with that mood. The next law is that he senses the world around him and knows his internal status all the time. Again, that means, you know, 38 sensors working all the time, sampling the environment. And then the last thing is life forms, Yugobi life forms have to evolve over time. And that's for several reasons. One is it's just very cool to have a different product after 6 months or 3 days than you do when you begin. The other is actually for a very kind of hard-boiled engineering reason is you can't really find a processor that has enough memory to store all the possible combinations of every iteration of sensor reaction that Pleo's going to have in his lifetime. You actually don't have the space for that. So the only way to create a life form like this is to make it a learning robot, so it writes its own code.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting. I mean, this is when people think about this nearby, this is sounding like a bit like science fiction. I think this is where a lot of science fiction theorists, if you will, or, you know, fictional futurists have been sort of looking at this kind of thing. Or this is a sensory, you know, it's approaching the idea of a sentient being that's manufactured. That's
it, right. Is in many ways, but also in a friendly spin. We want to have a relationship with the consumer. We want the consumer to feel this is a compelling life being, if you will, in this case, life form. So it's a great story in terms of the user experience. It's going to be very rich and interactive. And as Caleb was suggesting, Pleo, our first product, Pleo, will evolve and adapt over time to its owners. So if you're playful with Pleo, it'll become more interactive with you. So it's going to become more of a true, like, pet-like experience as you interface with Pleo.
Well, great. Well, I've been speaking with Caleb Chung and Bob Christopher from Yugobi Incorporated. When will Pleo be available?
Q3, late Q3 of this year. So in time for the, hopefully, the holidays.
Okay. Well, good luck with the product, and we look forward to seeing little Cleos out there. And thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm Andrew Graham, CEO of Bones in Motion.
What does the application do?
Well, the company is about active lifestyle on cell phones. So our first application is called BIM Active. And it's built for people who are runners or cyclers or walkers. They want to get fit. They want to track their progress. They want to be able to count calories, perhaps. If you're training even for a marathon, you can use our GPS on a phone capability to show you how you're doing on a mile-by-mile basis and even download your route to maps. Basically, we are an aspirational product for people that are really trying to record their progress, to measure it, and get better.
Okay. Now, is it something that requires a special phone then? It'll need to be GPS enabled?
Yes. You need to be with a carrier who supports location services on phones, and so we've announced the relationship with Sprint this week.
Is there a way through the BIM Active website or to the application on the website of having several people sort of maybe comparing what they do, like say as far as speed or progress or kind of competition?
Certainly is. I mean, we enable a friendly competition a number of ways. You just go to bimactive.com, which is our website. You're able then to make several choices. You can publish your run in a public blog so your friends can see it that way, and you can compare blog entries. That's one way. Another is that we assign a degree of difficulty index to a particular activity. So you can even compete with friends who are in different cities because we normalize factors or equalize factors like humidity, elevation, length of route, and a number of criteria, so just to keep it fair.
Where can people find out about it, and what's the website again?
Sure, you can go to bimactive.com. That's bimactive.com. And we'll take you from there to a compatible carrier, to a compatible handset that you could purchase. And, of course, even at that website, if you don't have a compatible phone, you can tell us which one you do have, and we can alert you when it's available. Or you can upload your activities manually. Or even if you have a GPS device, we can pull data off of that device. So the website is really designed to be a welcoming community for anybody who's trying to share this kind of information. Adding the phone to it just makes it tremendously convenient.
I'm here with Eileen Gittins from Blurb. Now tell me a little bit about what Blurb is and why people are getting excited about it.
Blurb is a place where anyone can go and make a professional quality book in less than an hour for about $30. People are getting really excited about it because they have digital photographs locked on their hard drives that never see the light of day. And now for a very modest investment of both time and money, you can get those images out of there into a professional looking book that you can share with family and friends. Another reason why Blurb is getting a lot of attention is our whole community model and social networking model. We recently did a cookbook with the Junior League in Napa, Sonoma, and there were 50 women who submitted recipes for the book, and it was all enabled through Blurb. And then Blurb provides support for the fundraising environment so that they can get out of the check writing business. They can direct all of their folks to come to blurb.com and buy the book at Blurb, and then we send them a royalty check from the proceeds.
I mean, one has a bunch of photographs. Does one have to upload them first, or is this something that is sort of like client-based or something that's in your computer?
No, it's a great question. So you go to blurb.com and you download the free application. By the way, it works on both a PC or a Mac. So you download that, and at that point, then you're invited to make any kind of book you'd want. Say you were making a photo book, there would be a little button that says Get Pictures, and you identify the pictures on your hard drive, and it goes and slurps them in automatically. Good to go.
And if people want to find out about it, where can they go?
Blurb.com, blurb.com.
I'm here with Tim English of the DigiSlide Company. Now, they're here all the way from Australia. They've got this pretty interesting little product that you have.
We've developed a miniature projection system capable of interfacing with all handheld electronic devices. So we've essentially developed a miniature projector that you can actually be integrated into a mobile, a cell phone, a PDA, a GPS, an MP4 player, so you can project an image straight from your handheld electronic device onto a wall. So it takes away the restraints of the small screen display that is currently with your cell phone, your PDA, and those other handheld products, and projects a large 11 by 17 inch image directly onto the wall. Just here on our countertop, we've got a beta prototype of the DigiSmart technology, and it's basically a lipstick-sized device. If you can imagine a lipstick, it's possibly smaller than that in real life, and we have the potential of making it 20% smaller as we progress with this technology. So that can actually be integrated into all those handheld electronic devices, or it can be a standalone peripheral. We've got it hooked up to an MP4 player, which is similar to format to your iPod and iRiver and those sort of products. And we've also got it hooked up to a memory card reader there, so we can show you an image straight from that as well. And so the versatility is there for any product that is handheld to integrate this product into.
What about cell phones?
That'll be one of our major focuses to the cell phones. It's a $100 billion industry, and to integrate this product will just give that enhanced functionality that's never been achieved before with a projector in a cell phone.
Now, when do you see this rolling out?
Subject to funding, we're looking at by the end of 2006, this product will be available. www.digislide.com.au.
We are here at Demo 2006 in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm here with Rafi Krikorian, who is with mp3car.com. What do we have here? You have a little demo, a little box. It's called Street Deck. What does Street Deck do?
So Street Deck is a combination of two things. Street Deck has the, what we're calling the automotive enabler, which we co-developed with Intel, and that allows you to seamlessly hook a PC into your car. So that box takes away the responsibilities from your car radio, and you can wire it directly into the speaker harness of your car. It gives you the FM tuning, it gives you the Bluetooth information. And then the software end, the Street Deck, is how to control that hardware appliance in a very safe way, so you can still keep both eyes on the road and make sure you don't die in the process. So the Street Deck Auto Enabler itself is just a box that'll get mounted somewhere in your car. You probably will never have to interact with that box once installed again.
Okay, maybe you can describe it a little bit, because
Sure. We're
looking at something that's probably about the size of a car stereo.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the whole point. The next generation version of this is meant to be the car stereo with the buttons in front and the LCD screen. So it's about the size. The circuitry is meant to fit in that car stereo slot. Just this version is meant to be run in headless mode and have everything taken over by an in-car display. And then the in-car display itself runs just our next generation HMI, Human Machine Interface software, that allows you to interact with your car in a gesture-based system. There's no buttons to play with, but instead you just draw gestures on the screen, and that brings you from point A to point B. And you can easily do that without having to take your eyes off the road.
Okay. So if people want to find out more about the Street Deck, where do they go?
StreetDeck.com.
Okay. And that's StreetDeck.com.
StreetDeck.com.
Okay. We've been speaking with Rafi Krikorian from mp3car.com with a great new product called Street Deck. It integrates navigation, it integrates your iPod, it integrates car diagnostics, all into one very easy to use touch interface screen for your vehicle. And good luck.
Thank you very much.